Hello and welcome to Our Dads Died, the podcast by two people whose dads are dead. And four people whose dads are maybe dead, maybe still alive. Maybe you've got a dead mum or family member or friend or you know, maybe you've come to grips with death in your own personal life. Maybe you're a ghost. Welcome to Our Dads Died, the podcast, the ghosts. This is another very special episode. So last week we had the fantastic wedding episode. If you haven't listened to that, it is an episode recorded on the day of my wedding, which is particularly entertaining. So do check that out. We've had some fantastic guests over the past several episodes, and this is the final episode of the first series, if you like. That is putting a marker down for all of the episodes that we recorded prior to the release of this podcast, episodes recorded during the COVID pandemic, which is referenced to in this episode. This is not really a best of, it's more like the bits you missed kind of episode. We've collated some of the bits that didn't make it into previous episodes, whether that's just because they didn't quite fit, you know, within a theme of an episode, or they're funny but didn't quite make the cut. This is where those bits have gone. All the best bits didn't fit. You know, when you're trying to make something that's around 40 minutes long, some things don't quite make it there. So I'm not going to hold you for very long. As before, it's got some swearing. You're going to hear Ishan Akbar again. You're going to hear from Victor, the mortician. There is some swearing. There is also, because there's a moment with Victor where we talk about some quite graphic, visually graphic ideas, so that kind of stuff is going to come. There's some swearing as well, but I think overall it's quite fun. So enjoy, and you'll hear from me at the end.
And so, what happens to all the stuff that you remove from for the purges and the blood?
Okay, yeah. So let's say we have somebody, somebody on the embalming table, and we're proceeding with embalming. So we're going down the arteries, pushing the blood through the circulatory system and out through the vein. And as we're doing that, they start like stomach purging, and this kind of coffee ground brown stuff is just kind of streaming out of their mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, during the process, you just kind of let it happen. You're like, all right, just like let it come out, and then it's out. But let's say you have someone in the casket and they're dressed and they've got their tie on, yeah, and they start doing it then you run into panic mode usually. Yeah. And you're just like, you're like taking wads of cotton and like putting it down the nasal cavities to try to like soak that up.
Right.
Or if you're still at the funeral home, we have a, what's called a hydroaspirator. So it's like a vacuum pump that's hooked up to your, to like running water. So water runs, creates a vacuum. And if that's the case, then we'll just aspirate like down the nose and in the mouth, trying to like suck out as much of that as you can. But usually, you know, if you do a good job embalming, you're usually removing most of those trouble areas.
Right.
Before you get to that point.
Right. Right. I've been to a few funerals and I've never seen.
Yeah.
You know, although like they're closed casket, I suppose, so I wouldn't know.
Could have all be going off in there.
Yeah. So you guys don't do open casket where you are.
Not really.
Don't think so.
It's uncommon. Very, very uncommon.
Unless something's gone terribly wrong.
Sure.
Then
people do visit, like when my dad died, my aunt and uncle went to see him after he died, so they went to see the body kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they still, you can still do that, you can still see them after they're dead, but yeah, it's so uncommon.
It's not open to the public, yeah.
It's, I mean, yeah, that is like so uncommon in this country, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And so we're a nation of prudish people, you know what I mean?
I suppose you are, yeah.
Yeah.
That's all right. You gotta embrace it.
Dead, you know.
Yeah,
but it's a lot more. Like, it's a lot more common in the States, is it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's. I mean, yeah. We're just, you know, we're assertive out there Americans. You know, like we are. We are. Hey, look, a dead body. You know, soaking.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Plus, it's a lot of work to embalm. I guess you sort of want to show off that, don't you? I mean, that's
absolutely.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, look at what I did.
Yeah, I worked with like a 90-year-old Norwegian man. My first real job. And his motto was, "Well, Victor, you can't have a good funeral with a bad body." That was his motto. Which is somewhat true, I guess. You know, like, this is kind of, I don't want to say it's like it's our product, but like certainly like my skill set has a place, and like if you suck at what you do, like, what's the point, you know?
Yeah.
This is the thing about your job being important, Victor. You know, you've got no choice. You've got to be good at it. You know, it's important.
On the first try, absolutely.
Yeah. It's not a try again type of situation, really, is it?
I mean, has it ever gone wrong and you've messed up first time round?
Yeah. I can't like think of a good example. But like, you'll get situations where, so you're injecting fluid right with your embalming machine. And you're pumping fluids in at a high pressure, typically to bust up blood clots and push them out. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, a person will throw this clot, and all of a sudden, like, the left eye will start swelling up. And you're like, hold on. Like, you know, it's like panic mode, you know, shut everything down, figure out what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
And normally, like, if you're smart, you catch that early. And then you just end up, like, opening more arteries and veins and doing things, like, step by step rather than trying to, like, embalm the whole body in one shot.
Right.
It's a
point of pride among morticians, being able to just one and done it.
I nailed it, and it
went bang, cup of tea, came back, sorted.
Yep. The one and done is it's nice. It doesn't always happen. Well, and the thing is, like, if you talk to any embalmer, like, the one you're talking to is going to be the best embalmer around. Like, that's how it works. Like,
okay.
Clearly, I'm the best one. Yeah. So, but, you know, people pride themselves on, oh, yeah, I was in and out in like an hour. But, like, if their hands and legs start breaking down, then what? You know, like, if you're not paying attention to what you're doing, like, it's worth putting in the extra, whatever, half hour to make sure everything is right.
Yeah.
So I'm not big on that. Here, this is fun, you guys. So my job when I was in mortuary school, was I worked in the university's whole body donation lab, in the cadaver lab.
Okay.
Right.
I figured, like, well, I'm going to spend the rest of my life as a funeral director. I may as well do something different now.
Yeah.
So not that different, though. Yeah.
kind of. Well, I mean,
working in a shop would have been fairly different.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that would have been smarter. You're onto something there. I screwed up. So I worked in this body donation lab, and that was kind of interesting because there you're preparing bodies for anatomical study for like doctors for the medical school, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a whole different thing, but you know, you're not preparing someone to last for 2 weeks until their funeral. You're preparing someone to last for 18 months, you know? So having to be extremely thorough. And you're opening all sorts of arteries and veins to make sure that your distribution of fluid is, you know, as good as possible. So that was kind of nice because you learn how to do that. And then when you're in my situation where you're a, you know, small town embalmer, if you have a problem, you're like, oh, well, I've done this on a huger scale. Like, you're not really afraid to jump in and do things right. Kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Funerals where you'll get funerals where there's nobody at all, right?
Yeah.
Do you prefer the ones where there's nobody, easy beans, job done, or do you prefer the ones where you've got quite a lot of work to do?
Good question. I think sometimes the ones where, like, let's say you have just a simple cremation and an urn, sometimes those are actually more work on my end than the actual, like, traditional, you know, Polish Catholic funeral, let's say.
Yeah.
Because, like, with a Polish Catholic funeral or a you know, like an old style, you know, Norwegian Lutheran funeral, like, this is the way it's done. And you just execute every step and everyone is, in essence, the same. Whereas if you have something where it's like maybe cremation first and the urn and it's going to take place in 2 months, then it's more challenging because the people that are planning the thing, you might have more time to just let the wheels spin, or like I say, you know, you let the wheels spin and then they fall off. You know, it's just like, things get crazy. You're like, you know, I don't know. It's like every little detail gets gone over six times via email, phone call, and text message. So you're trying to like keep everything together and make sure you've got every little detail right. Whereas sometimes with the more traditional funeral, like well, you've done it 1,000 times. You know how it works. If something comes up, like, pretty quick on your feet, you can figure it out. But with these maybe delayed funerals where they have, you know, all these different, very personal, very particular requests, like, it's sometimes it's hard to keep them all straight. Not going to lie. COVID, we had a lot of that because you had people dying, but then nobody could gather.
Yeah.
So, like, earlier, well, let's say the spring before things kind of got better, we had like 30 funerals to do this summer with, you know, backed up from last, you know, March or last fall. I was like, man, I got 6 months of notes I got to go over and make sure I have right. You know, like it's yeah. Tough. Yeah, it's tough.
But it's quite an interesting converse relationship then, really, that we've got, because I think my dad, I know my dad never wanted to have kids in the first place. So right. For the duration that I was a kid, our relationship was okay, but mm-hmm. he sort of just treated me like his mate, which is fine, and it's a relationship I was happy with, ultimately. Mm. But what that meant was, by the time I was 18, we could go to the pub together. And you know, we have a drink together. And that became a real, you know, kind of way that we actually had a relationship. So
yeah.
We went to the pub a lot. You know, I spent a lot of times in pubs with my dad. So, you know, but then, you know, he never taught me how to ride a bike, whereas your dad, I might have taught you how to ride a bike. So
he did.
Indeed. Yeah. So that's the difference. You see, you got that. You got the first phase of your life, but I got the second phase.
Yeah,
if we simply combined our dads,
you'd have the perfect life.
The perfect dad.
Yeah.
All right.
That's interesting.
So if we combined our dads,
yeah,
but it creates one dad who's got both those good qualities, but it also creates another dad who doesn't take to the pub and doesn't teach you how to ride a bike.
Right. Right.
Which do it? You might and get
it's 50-50,
dad,
but what can you get?
You might get.
Well, I mean, currently I've got no dad at all, so even
even
terrible dad is better than no dad, or is he?
Is it though? I mean, what's terrible dad? I mean, what's he doing?
Oh, yeah, I think dead great dad is maybe better than living awful dad who keeps coming around asking you for money.
Okay. Yeah. Awkward.
Awful dad who's like, no matter how hard you try, he always comes around and he's always dressed so strangely. And like, not like eccentrically, just no, like he's wearing hot pants. And
he's got like a Panama hat on and it's like, who even wears those anymore?
And a duffel coat, but he's like tied it around his waist. He's topless. And he's got his nipple pierced and you're like, this is so embarrassing.
Awful.
He keeps coming to your work.
Oh, like, no! Why
and
would
they all
add
love
that?
Him. Everyone at work really likes him.
That's the
and so
worst.
You seem like a dick because
that's
you're like
worse.
Annoyed at your dad. He's a bad dad, Tom, this guy.
But everyone at work thinks he's a great lad. Because they only see the good times.
Yeah.
But they
Meanwhile,
don't see when he's at the bottom of the bottle.
I meet up with you at the pub and you've got Perfect Dad. And Perfect Dad's driven you there and said, hey, I'll come pick you up.
Your dad, he gets there and he's finishing off people's drinks for them. Yeah. Oh, are you going to finish that? Or, you know, and he's doing that. It's horrible.
He's wearing a nappy and clown makeup, and you're like, what is he? Why are you like this? Oh,
you
I wish I'd made that at all.
You started this by saying he wasn't eccentric. You've ended it by saying he was wearing exclusively a nappy and clown makeup.
Yeah, yeah.
You've turned it round.
Yeah, he's eccentric, but not in the kind of... Not like, oh, he's a bit of an eccentric, just like he's got issues.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't... So here's my question when we're talking about goodbyes.
Mm.
And this is something that's come up briefly before is the film Onward, which I've never seen, and which I believe your girlfriend Amanda started you watching.
Played it to me on my birthday, yes.
On your birthday, yeah. Only for you to go...
Which, I will add, as has been said previously on the podcast, would have been basically the one-year anniversary of my dad's death.
Yeah. So very quickly, describe what the film Onward is about.
It's about
the idea of it.
Two kids who
their dad is dead. They're probably brothers. And they basically find his magic book or something like that. And they magic him back to life, maybe.
For a day, isn't it?
Or they're trying to.
I think they get to bring him back for a day.
Yeah, you know about this film more. I mean, we turned it off 10 minutes in.
I've only seen the trailer.
I gleaned what the film was going to be about from the opening 10 minutes, and I said, yeah, we have to stop watching this because it's going to make me so upset.
Yeah.
We're eating Mackey D's, and you don't want to be crying while eating McFlurry.
Something very, very tragic about that image, isn't there? Soggy horrible. McDonald's chips. They're salty enough. You don't need to cry on them. So, here's my question. Mm. You find your dad's magic book or whatever it is.
Here it is.
You can bring him back for 24 hours. Ooh. What do you do?
I suppose let's change this slightly and say he's coming back for 24 hours. Someone else has done it, so it's happening. Because I don't want the whole, I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
I don't want it to wet morals.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to talk about practicalities.
Right. You've got to plan the perfect day with your dad. Bear in mind, you've only got 24 hours, and then you will definitely never see him again.
My dad is the kind of guy who... was the kind of guy, I should say, who would go on an all-inclusive holiday where you sit on a beach. He was not the kind of guy who would, let's go to Rome and walk around. That's my mum. That was never my dad. He wasn't that kind of guy.
Right.
He'd go to a museum, have a look, 10 minutes, see you later. Took me to an aquarium as a kid for a bit, fine. But he's not, let's spend a day in an aquarium, not that guy.
Right.
So, if you think about it from what he would prefer, if he came back...
I was going to say, because the question isn't, if your dad came back, would you take him to an aquarium?
No.
So it seems to be the question you're answering.
Well, it's relevant because he did take us to aquarium a few times as a kid, so it's quite a nice thing.
Yeah.
Aquarium or a zoo is that, you know, we would, in reality, we'd probably go to Marwell Zoo, where we would go every Easter, and actually every Good Friday. So, is that not... That's quite a relevant...
Is that the day... Is that the day? No, that's the day when he died, isn't it? And then he came back on Sunday.
Would have been Easter Sunday. Still, one of the top 10 holidays, you'd have to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
we do that for a bit. And then, you know what? We'd make the tuna pasta in the morning. I'm a vegan now, but I'd not be vegan for the day, so we could have that. Mm. We'd have a tuna pasta in the morning, bring that with us, all that stuff, get home, and then just watch football and sit and watch telly. Because that's the kind of thing he would like. We'd have a few drinks. That would have been... his ideal circumstance, you know? He wouldn't want to be like, oh, let's do a million things, let's go kite surfing. He wouldn't get a kick out of that.
Yeah.
Unless my plan was to torture him. Why did you leave me, you bastard? We're going fucking bungee jumping, you dick. You know? Yeah, not ideal.
And are you talking about you're having those deep conversations, or are you just sitting watching the football, chatting?
When we're a few beers deep, we're watching the telly at the end there, we might veer into some deeper topics. Deep on an emotional level, I don't think we would start talking about Israel, but I thought that would get more from honest review.
Sorry, I laughed quietly, but I laughed...
You were just thinking, I don't want to laugh in a way that makes it seem like I have an opinion on the Israel-Palestine conflict.
Oh, no, I mean, I definitely have an opinion.
I just want to avoid it.
Just well aware that my opinion may be completely wrong because I know almost nothing.
Weird. It would just be like that. A really nice fond memory I have is when it was just us two, watching the telly. The next day we were going to go and watch Bournemouth play. And he was super proud of me because it was at Bournemouth Uni, and I just got the part-time job in the Gold Sands Stadium doing the student radio, the community radio there. A guy called Jordan Clark, legend. Paid me in Strongbow. What an icon. Dad would have approved. So he was super proud of me, and we were staying up that night, and we just watched the telly, and he watched an episode of South Park with me.
Right.
Just to give it a go. And we were drinking... Coronas watching South Park and eating ice lollies.
Nice.
And I think I would do my best to try and, you know, recreate a similar vibe, because it's a lovely memory.
Just do that again.
Would you do that again?
Yeah.
What about yourself? Nice. What about yourself? You've got a day with your dad.
Yeah, what do you do? So you've kind of gone from a what would he want perspective, whereas I think the thing is that, you know, my dad's been dead longer. He's been dead for nearly seven years, and a lot in my life has changed since then. So I think I would want to spend quite a lot of the time being like, this is me now.
Oh, God, you introduce him to your new girlfriend. Yeah, of course.
Exactly. I'd want him to meet Jess and be like, this is my girlfriend. She's great and I love her. And I'd want her to meet him. And then I'd want him to see me do stand-up, because I didn't do stand-up when he died. I'd never expressed an interest in it. And it is a thing that I think he would be very impressed by, because he always used to find it impressive that I wrote stuff, because he was a doctor and he was like, I don't understand how you can come up with things. And if you read the stuff that he was reading back then that I'd written, fucking dog shit. And he was impressed by that. So I'd like him to come to a gig and just see like what I can do now.
If he thought that was good.
Yeah. I mean, there's every chance. Imagine if I bombed. Imagine if I bombed. That's back for one night.
Only one.
And I have an absolute stinker.
Oh, boy.
And I do all my material about him being dead. That'd be a laugh.
Weird material. Hang on a second. So does the person who's dead know that they're just back for one day?
Yeah. I think so. I think that's the agreement.
In my perspective, it was just as though they just woke up and everything was normal. They didn't remember any of the dying bit, and they just woke up and it was a normal day. And I was like, we're going to go to the zoo. And he'd be like, brilliant. And then it was like, we just watched, you know, and then he just goes to sleep and it's all like that. That's what it was.
No. This is, in my head, this is a big... You've had to do a spell, remember, from the magic book to bring him back.
It's a spell, Rich. It's magic. It can be whatever you want.
Well, you can do it that way if you want. In my head, this is...
Yeah.
Because otherwise, what an intense day we'd be having of me, like, really emoting at him and needing to say all this stuff. And he'd be like, why are you being weird? And he'd maybe be worrying about, like, oh, I've got work tomorrow and stuff. In my head, he's come back for 24 hours.
Yeah, but that's better if he's worrying about, oh, I've got work tomorrow, because that's real.
No. I don't want that. I want him back for 24 hours and only spending time with me. And then I want to go to the pub with him, because, as I said, never really got the chance to go to the pub with him. And I'd like to go to a pub that would allow a lock-in and just get drunk with my dad, because I don't think I ever really got drunk with my dad.
You never got drunk with your dad.
Yeah, imagine if it turned out he was a really mean drunk. Again, I've taken him
to
a
gig. It's funny having met your dad
bombed,
that.
And then we get drunk and he's just horrible.
It's sort of, it's not hard for someone who knew my dad to see how he could get a little mean sometimes. With all the best will in the world, if someone who met my dad would not find that hard to believe. Right. I met your dad, and I just can't see how it's possible.
No.
I think it'd be almost funny if he tried to be stern.
Oh, man.
COVID's very interesting for this. You know, my uncle died last week. His funeral's on Friday. Well, you know, as I said, I no longer feel any sadness. After my dad died, I have no emotions. the funeral's on Friday, and I'm not gonna be able to go. It's in Liverpool, I'm in London.
Okay.
Geographically, for the UK, that's quite far. I appreciate
in America. How long would you have to travel?
It would be about 4 hours away.
Okay, See, like, we look at that and we're like, oh, that's not so bad.
In America, that's how far you'd go to get to the Walmart, I guess. But in England, it's far. I'm not gonna be able to make it. And we're going to watch it, the live stream. We're going to watch the live stream. I was just wondering what that's been a bit like for yourselves with the live streaming
that
funerals.
That's been different. you know, usually, you know, I'm not saying you're performing necessarily in my job, but there's something of that, right? Things have to be, you know, sharp and ceremonial and on point. Mm. And doing that for like a crowded church is one thing. But it definitely takes on a different dimension where you're like, oh, this is recorded and it's just going to be available in perpetuity. Like, you better get it right.
Yeah.
You know? So that's, yeah, I've done pretty well this year. Actually, when I was in school, I worked at a funeral home in St. Paul, Minnesota. And this is like my worst moment, you guys. I'm just going to share it with you. Actually, you know what? I'll share my worst professional moment, and then I can share my worst personal moment.
Wonderful.
My worst professional moment was we had a funeral for a Vietnamese Catholic priest who was a prisoner of war in Vietnam.
Wow.
Right? Like, he was just a stud. And so the bishop is there. There's like 13 priests. The church is full. Mass is in Vietnamese. And in the Vietnamese culture, typically the family of a person, so like your direct descendants, so your children and grandchildren, they wear this white bandana around their head to signify mourning and to signify that like they are the ones that are mourning the most. In this case, because he obviously doesn't have children, but his children is the whole parish. So the whole church is full of, packed with like 500 Vietnamese Catholics, bandanas. You got the priest, the bishop, you know, the American Legion is there, and like the Vietnamese contingent is there, and it's a big thing. Yeah. And so I help roll out the casket, and I'm just like kind of wigging out, and we get the casket loaded up, and then I go back into the church to grab this big vase of roses. Or no, sorry, it was the casket spray. So the casket spray full of roses, right? That sits on top of the casket. Mm-hmm. And I'm carrying it out, and it's December, and I slip on the ice.
Oh.
And up go the flowers.
Oh, no.
And then face down in the snowbank. And the thing that makes this the worst is not only that it happened in front of the bishop and everybody else, but it was being recorded by like 50 people. like just to get an idea, all the way out to the cemetery, there was a guy hanging out of his window recording the hearse going to the cemetery, right? So it's like everybody saw this, it's on full display, and I'm just standing there like a moron, like picking flowers out of the snow.
If it helps at all, if that happened in this country, there is no question everyone would applaud, laugh out loud. They would genuinely love it.
Yeah, same noise that you make in a bar when someone drops a stack of pints.
It'd be one of them.
Yeah, that was fun.
I'm assuming the bishops won. Whee!
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Not quite.
You were brought up Muslim. Do you still believe in an afterlife? Do your family believe in an afterlife?
This is such a good question. It's something I've been grappling with for a bit. I don't know is the answer. Because, and I've talked about it before, which is that maybe because I was raised a Muslim, I find it quite difficult to accept the idea that my mum popped her clogs. That's quite a nice one, isn't it? Popped her clogs.
Mm, yeah. That's a jaunty one.
I quite
one.
Like it. Someone said, yeah, sorry your mum popped her clogs. Yeah, that's nice. that my mum passed away and that's it. Like, that seems a bit final when there's so much about the world we don't understand. And when I go to the graveyard to visit my mum's grave, visit as if the grave fucking knows I'm there, when I go there to pay my respects to my mum, I do say prayers in Arabic, and somewhere in me I'm like, oh, perhaps this is connecting with my mum in some way. So I guess, I don't know how you guys feel, but I do want to think that there is some sort of connection, but I don't think she's kind of flouncing about up in heaven or whatever it is. I don't think that happens.
I think I'm sort of on the same page in that, I mean, I was raised sort of loosely Christian in that way that only Christians are, where they're like, you're Christian, but you don't have to ever go to church or think about God. But I now would say I'm an atheist, and I don't believe...
Bloody Protestant, sorry.
Exactly. But I don't believe in an afterlife, but I can't quite make the connection in my head after my dad died that he's gone, that I'll never see him again. Even now, that doesn't seem to make sense. So there's a part of me that still obviously hopes and sort of on some level believes that there must be something else. But, I mean, what it is, I have no idea. But yeah, it's hard.
It's cognitive dissonance, isn't it?
Yeah.
You accept that they're dead and that's fine and we've got that, but you're unable to really wrap your head around the concept that you'll never again see this person. Not that you expect you're going to see them at any point, but you haven't accepted the idea that they're gone forever, if you like. I don't think that's something you ever have to accept, because even if you don't believe in the afterlife, you probably still do believe that there's a non-zero chance that there's something, right? Because it'd be ridiculous to say otherwise, no?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you guys seen your dads in your dreams since they passed away?
Oh, my God.
We have. We've actually recorded a whole episode discussing our dreams about our dads.
Ah, right, yeah.
Have you... Well, this is the thing. So that apparently we discovered there are two types of dreams, one of which is a visitation dream where a dead relative will come to visit you. And then the other one was called, I think, and we had a right old laugh about this, it was called a release dream. And obviously you would imagine that would be something quite different and shouldn't involve a visit from a dead relative. But
yeah, no, absolutely.
But that's one where you're apparently letting go. spiritually.
I think
still
there's
not much better.
I think there's a third one, because I've definitely had the visitation dream. I've had a couple of those. But there's also one where I've observed my mum doing really mundane things, and that kind of pisses me off a bit. Like, she'll be just sat in the back of a car, not doing very much. And I'm like, well, if you're in the afterlife, why aren't you bothered about the fact that you've left me here? Fuck's sake. Like, you're just... Or there was one where I saw her in a dream, and she was just crossing the road. She pressed the button waiting for the green man and then crossed the road, and that was it. And it was so mundane, I woke up angry at the fact that she wasn't doing more exciting things in the fucking afterlife.
So in these dreams, are you aware in the dream that she's dead? Because whenever I dream about my dad, he's alive and I'm alive, and I don't think, oh, that's my dead dad. And then I wake up and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, they're alive. My mum's been alive in my dreams.
Yeah, and it's only when you wake up that you realise, What would you rather she was doing in these dreams? How exciting do you want it to be?
Would you rather your mum was on one duck-sized horse? Or? I don't know. I feel like, okay, so the Muslim, and this is one, you know, death and everything surrounding death and funerals, particularly for me, and I think for a lot of people, they cannot. I don't think they can be extricated from the religious influence of how they're viewed and understood. So, for me, I've been sold this idea that in the afterlife, if my mum's been good, she is in this beautiful place, just getting whatever she wants, having a great time, seeing all her loved ones that have gone before her. So I would expect her to kind of be there, just like wearing the best clothes, and when she was crossing the road she looked terrible and just hanging out with the aunts and cousins that are no longer around. They don't seem to call her in heaven for some inexplicable reason. She's always out and about by herself. So that's what I want to see happen. So I don't really know what's going on. I need to have a word.
Yeah, I see what you mean. She's gone to this better place, as they say. You don't imagine she's going to still need to sit in the back of a car or cross a road.
The better place cannot have a tarmacked pelican crossing. It just can't.
Absolutely not.
Can you imagine turning up to heaven and you've got a cross, you've got to wait for a beep, beep, beep? I mean, no, come on.
It would at least be a zebra crossing, wouldn't it?
Of all the crossings.
Yeah.
Yeah, but maybe we can also learn a little bit to not give ourselves quite such a hard time.
Well,
I think it's different for me. I think I'm further down the line, and I've maybe turned that corner of not necessarily having to beat myself up constantly and reaching some form of peace with the grief that's still there. And not all the time. You know, there are times where I remember something and I feel intensely guilty. And, you know, not saying goodbye to my dad is something that does weigh on my mind and will, I think, for a long, long time. Whereas for you, while I've had time to make peace with that, you're a year and a half in, and there's still so many emotions that it's hard. It's very easy to put them all under the umbrella of guilt. It's a very easy emotion to feel. because it's one we're all very well primed for.
Mm.
But I guess if there are people listening who are feeling very guilty about what they said, what they didn't say, the goodbye they didn't do, if they weren't there, if they were there, and they found it hard, that's fine. That is the way it will be.
Yeah, I'm starting to warm to this idea that, yeah, that it's going to feel like that for a while. That's how it feels, and it's going to keep feeling like that for a long time, and your best bet is to lean into it and stop trying to avoid it and just accept it. That's going to happen. You're going to feel bad for ages.
Yeah.
You know, that might be healthier, to just accept it's going to be shit for forever.
You have to think...
You are going to want to die.
There's maybe a middle ground between those two.
They're extremes, aren't they? But then that also represents a 5-year gap in parental death.
Yeah. I think maybe it will feel bad for a long time, and it has to feel bad for a long time. But it's better that it feels bad for a long time than it doesn't feel bad intensely. It just feels a bit sad forever because you never fully deal with it.
If you can decode what that meant, then enjoy that, whatever the meaning was.
There's some wisdom buried very, very deep at the bottom of that
sentence.
It just
felt like there were a lot of commas. That's what I felt like.
It was mostly commas.
If you wrote it out, you'd be like, there's a lot of clauses. You just want to...
Just it's 10 p.m. at night on
some
a
of
Thursday.
These clauses.
It's going to be mainly punctuation from here on out, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Yes. Fair enough.
Yes. Maybe we can all learn to go a little bit easier on ourselves when we're dealing with grief and loss. Maybe we can just have a laugh at all the things that are stupid about it, which is this podcast really, isn't it? And if you've been enjoying it, hurrah! This was a bit of a weird one, almost like a clip show, except clips you've never heard before. Strange. Best of the rest, I guess. But coming from next week, we'll be back with brand new content. Well, this was new content to you, I suppose, just old content to us. Although it took me so long to put these clips together, I would be faster just recording new episodes. So I'm not quite sure why I decided to in the end. There we are. We've got a brand new episode coming up next week. We've got new, really funny, really great guests lined up who we've spoken to already, a couple of them, and they're absolutely brilliant. You know, it's going to be amazing. It's just going to be amazing. What I will say to you, dear listener, is if you could do two things for me, that'd be absolutely fantastic. The first thing is, if you've listened this far, I would absolutely love it if you could tell a friend about this podcast. The numbers we've had have been a bit silly. Really, really, really amazing. Thank you so much, you know, for listening. It means so much. And the amount of listeners we've had is really meaningful to me. And it really helps a lot with the bad feelings that sometimes come from talking about grief as openly as this, to know that it has aided people. So that's amazing. And you know, if you think it might, if you know anybody who you think might get something out of this, do please share it with them. Share the podcast, pass the podcast, even if it's somebody who just finds it funny listening to two middle class guys having a banter. Please do share the podcast. And the other thing is, if you are up in Scotland, you have still got a couple of days, including today, to watch Rich's stand-up show at the Fringe. It ends on Saturday the 19th of August. So if you're listening to this on Friday, it finishes tomorrow. If you're listening on Saturday, it finishes today. If you're listening on Sunday or any future... If you're listening in the future, don't worry. Although if you're listening really far in the future, you know, maybe he's got another show on, right? But if you're listening right now, you have very limited opportunity to see Rich's show. I went to see it on Friday last week, and I had an absolutely brilliant time. I thought it was so funny. You know, he's just got a way of telling a story which is really engaging and absolutely entertaining. Tells some very, very silly, sexy tales, which I also got to watch. It's a show about his girlfriend, and I got to watch it sat beside his girlfriend, which is a very unique experience. I can't promise you'll have that, but you'll have a good time. I do promise you that. So please do go. Richard Spalding, Look Who Loves Me. Starts at 6 o'clock at Hootenanny's at the Apex. Until next week, where you'll see me and Rich together once again, I just need to say that death comes for us all, but as we all know, it comes to you first. Goodbye.